Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
Okay, I'll tell you everything.
You.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 236, a conversation with Jean Grey and Quelle Chris. Jean Grey was our show's first ever guest back in 2012. She's one of the finest rappers out there and a fantastic and underappreciated producer as well. But in recent years, she's expanded her horizons even further, pushing into comedy, sitcoms, instructional albums, audiobooks, talk shows, variety shows, and even her own church. Quelle Chris joined us on episode 141 in 2016. Since then, he's released the acclaimed album Being You Is Great, I Wish I Could Be You More Often, and the instrumental project Lullabies for the Broken Brain. Now, Jean and Quelle have joined forces for the incredible new album Everything's Fine. The project has been met with critical raves from pretty much everywhere, and rightly so. It shows Jean and Quelle, a real-life couple who are, as you'll hear, currently planning a wedding, in absolute top form, rapping, singing, producing, and playing on a group of songs that respond to today's often frightening world with humor, sadness, and a reminder that when we tell people that everything's fine, we almost never mean it. If you like The Cipher, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thecipher show. Every new patron helps Josh get a little closer to buying a pair of those special glasses that show you who's actually an alien. Also, we know that some of you want shirts and other stuff, so please go to merch.thecipher show.com and get yourself a t-shirt or something. If you want to know any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecipher show.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what's going on with The Cipher. And now, here are Nick Offerman's in-laws, Jean Grey and Quelle Chris.
I meant to tell you before the microphones actually started rolling and shit so that it would seem more sincere, but legitimately, I love the album. It's fucking great.
Thank you.
And I'm really happy it exists.
We have no idea.
No.
What it's... We're so far away from it at this point. Like, there was a time where we were so inside of it. And I have no idea what it sounds like. I might listen to it like next year or something. but we were talking about this in the car on the way to the show yesterday. And we were like, I was like, you know, I'm really glad everybody likes the album. Like, that's great. Like, this is probably the best response I've ever gotten for anything I've ever put out. Mm-hmm. And then we were both like, kind of feel like we have better projects.
Oh,
but okay.
Yeah.
But you know, is if it's something that's like making everyone feel something at a certain point, then maybe it's not necessarily for us.
Right.
Yeah. I wanted to start with the title. You know, you've talked about the title a lot, but
this is why I like you, man. Because that's how you ask that question.
Yeah. You've talked about the surface level meaning of it. People say that, but they don't really mean it.
Yeah.
How did the meaning of the title change for you as you were making the record? Start with, when did you say this is going to be called Everything's Fine? Like, when in the process? Let's start there.
About like, let's say like 5 or 6 sessions in or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so pretty early.
Well, not necessarily.
No.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's a lot of our sessions were mostly spot ones, like late night, you know what I mean? Just mixing and mastering and things like that. But as far as the early recording sessions, it was just a lot. It was a small amount of very long sessions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Unnecessarily long. And it had been a long time since I'd been like, you know, let's go to the studio.
Yeah.
And then we're still there. Like, we go in to 6 in the morning,
wow.
Yeah. And your brain is just melting.
Wow.
And I think it was a really genuine, like, everything's fine. I'm dying. I'm dying right now.
Did the title shift for you over time in terms of what it meant?
I don't know. For me, I felt like it just immediately made sense for where the album seemed to be going. Like, I don't think we really had a plan.
Right. It would have been called Everything's Fine, even if we didn't call it Everything's Fine. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously, there are a bunch of the songs I want to talk about, but I guess Quelle first, like musically, you guys produced obviously different songs. Quelle, on a couple of the songs you produced, you'll have like drums and shit. You hear them and you're like, oh, those are recognizably hip hop drums in terms of the pattern.
Right.
But they're like fucked up. They're like filtered or small sounding or something kind of is off about them in a couple of the songs. I just wanted to ask about that approach.
I don't know. You know, I guess it's one of those things that when I read reviews or when I'm talking to fine gentlemen such as yourself, that I don't necessarily understand the question. You know what I mean? It's like if I spoke Spanish and then, you know, I'm going to put this together terribly because I haven't I slept like 2 hours. But, you know, like, to go, wow, like, that's so weird, whatever that weird sound you were making earlier. And I'm like, well, that's just Spanish, that's just the language I speak, you know what I mean? So to me, nothing sounds.
And he does speak fluent Spanish.
And I do
mostly in the house all the time,
but you know, like, for me it never sounds weird, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or like whenever I read reviews or I hear people like come to me and go like, your music's so like eclectic or challenging and so on and so forth, I'm like, it just sounds like hip hop to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess I don't really process it that way. It just sounds like hip hop.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
It always sounds like I, cause I can hear it and it's so interesting. The way that you hear sounds, like there's always like a cool Quelle filter on it. And it's not like a filter you can download and use in an app, and you're like, I don't, what is that? How did it, where did you get that from? And that's, it's incredibly rare. And it's, I don't know how he picks what samples he's using from like watching like hours and hours of these like movies and like this YouTube, I don't know how he gets them, but it happens.
Yeah.
Backtrack a little bit. That's what I was trying to get to, is when people would go to different countries and go, it sounds so exotic. You know what I mean? Right. And it's like, well, no, dog.
It's the language.
It's just what it is, bro. Yeah. Yeah. Relax.
You have mulatto beats. Mestizo, even.
Mestizo is such a strange
such a
one.
Fucked up word. So dope.
Oh, man. Gene, the very first thing you hear on the album is the sort of intro skit.
The only game show where there's only one answer to everything. Time to meet our contestants.
What was your model in terms of like game showy, jazzy music?
I just really like making bossa nova versions of things at any point.
Yeah.
If I can do that, then I'm having a great time. And I think I'd done like two of them, and I was like, and then I listened to it back and I was like, this is stupid. And then I listened to it again, and I'm like, you've been listening to things too much, just let it live and it works. So half of the fun was picking which beat that he did that I was gonna,
that you were gonna put your spin on.
Yeah,
my contribution is awesome. And like one of the funniest things about it are the different characters you'll do in the little interludes there. Were any of them inspired by real life interactions?
Instagram models. I think the flat tummy tea thing is so hilarious.
My contribution to this game.
Got my selfie stick cause I do it for the gram. This flat tummy tee cause I do it for the brands. I make a rap album because anybody can.
And I don't understand how people keep falling for it. I'm like, you understand that this is like a sponsored. Okay. It's like so many infomercials at the same time. But the This Is Tupac on my shirt was when, was it Kylie or Kendall or both Kendall and Kylie?
One of them,
got
I don't
sued.
Remember. Yeah.
I mean, I just understand rap. Yeah. Like, it's inside of me. It's like old school. Uh-huh. I so respect it. This is Tupac on my shirt.
In July 2017, Kendall and Kylie Jenner were sued by the photographer Mike Miller for using his photographs of Tupac on some t-shirts they released. The suit was dropped in early April of 2018.
Oh, that was so great.
Yeah. The funniest part of it to me is that they're so adamant about saying Tupac is old school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's real hip hop.
That is not old school.
So old school.
Young lady, calm down.
So old school.
I also just broke about, I just broke not too long ago, 10,000 followers on Twitter so I can finally officially get sponsored by Flat Tummy Tea.
Congratulations.
Yes, I, look forward I to made it. It.
Nice.
I want you to do that so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
And the Sistar and Woo Man.
Yo, yo, peace and blessings. Peace and blessings, no. Sistars. Don't us women gotta stick together. Please, you know what I'm saying? Fancy.
Definitely personal experiences. Yeah. I've been called both things multiple times.
Really?
Yes.
I thought that was, wow.
No.
That wasn't invented.
Real talk, Sean.
Wow.
She actually got those stories from me. I'm commonly going to shows and everyone's always like, hey, sis star, hey, you know what I mean? Sup, queen.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, yo, chill out with all the science, bro.
Woman with the womb, spelled womb, and then with the Y. It's really one of my, just makes me so angry.
That is, that is definitely something. On a slightly more serious note on that song, Gina, you talk about being sick and tired.
The neck loses, I'm tired, semicolon sick. I done threw up the deuces 86 times with no hint of stick on the bullseye.
And I think for both of you, like, that's a theme on the record.
I think that's, an adult thing. It's just, everyone is kind of with their jobs in general, and no matter what it is, you know, our job just happens to be a job that you don't get the weekend off, so you just have to be there always, and
right.
You're always expected to kind of be at work, and it makes you even more sick and tired than the normal sick and tired than you should be.
Right. But you're writing about these feelings, creating mm-hmm. songs about these feelings, presumably while actually feeling them.
Yeah.
So meta.
Yeah, it seems
it's exhausting.
Yeah, well, yeah, what was that like to kind of create stuff about this frame of mind while you're in the middle of actually experiencing it?
I'm used to that. I'm fine with that. It feels okay for me. I'm okay with having like an instant filter as much as possible and mm-hmm. also not as much as possible.
Yeah. And you've a nod to Taco Day. On that song.
Do I?
Yeah. You say it brought you a 9-minute shooter.
Yep.
Don't forget, like America, the land of the clan. They gave you that. I gave you 9-minute schoolgirl rants. Jill Palance.
See?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I guess like thinking back on that song, because it was a little while ago now.
Yeah.
What is it like to have written that? And now we're in the mass shooter age.
This is Nancy Chin with a WPTF special news brief. There's been another brutal school shooting.
Song Taco Day, which you can hear her talk about on episode 1 of The Cypher, appears on Mr. Len's 2001 album Pity the Fool. It's a song about a school shooting from the point of view of the shooter, a 16-year-old girl driven to the brink by familial abuse.
It was very interesting. But I kind of felt like it was going to be a thing, and there were just it felt like the in Fight Club, the changeover.
It's called a changeover. The movie goes on, and nobody in the audience has any idea.
It felt like the turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it was interesting. Like, people really didn't want to be able to have to play that. And I was like, okay, well, you're not going to play it anyway, so I'm just going to make it 9 minutes long. It doesn't matter. Like, this is not going to be a radio hit. It's a school shooting.
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell the story as much as possible. I didn't expect that it would be, you know, how many has it been this year so far?
Can't even count. Yeah.
Double digits. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 20. I think we were at 18 at a point before,
before the one that happened just a couple days before recording this.
Well, Fred, this is some bullshit. Frankly, I think that America needs to stop raising our children, and you should be allowed to beat your kids. Then shit like this would not happen.
This morning, according to MassShootingTracker.org, as of the date of this interview, Friday, April 6th, there have been 83 mass shootings in the United States in 2018, with a mass shooting defined as an incident of violence where four or more people are shot. This includes the incident referenced here, the shooting at the YouTube office in San Bruno, California.
So, sorry I was seeing into the future, you guys.
Yeah.
My bad.
And Quelle, you have that line on that song about the Black Messiah, which I think I was reading into like kind of FBI stuff.
What y'all know about the tree of life? What y'all know about copper? What y'all know about crystals? What y'all know about fear of a Black or more Messiah?
A February 1968 FBI memo by J. Edgar Hoover issued a directive to, quote, prevent the rise of a Messiah who could unify and electrify the militant Black nationalist movement. In a complete coincidence, Martin Luther King Jr. would be assassinated just a few months later.
On what? My contribution?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
What do I, can you tell me what this line is?
This is what's wrong. This is what's brains are full, man.
You mentioned something in passing about like, use the words Black Messiah.
I'm just going to say, perhaps yeah, you know, it was like mad deep when I was thinking about that. And I was like, you know, the thing is, like, when we talk about Messiah, we never really bring Blackness into it. And I really thought it would be good to bring that to the forefront on a rap song.
I hope you keep going through all these songs and we're like, absolutely. Sure. We didn't write this.
So that whole song about Gary Coleman, what was the reason behind the Gary Coleman song? Like, really? We did a Gary Coleman song.
I can just say anything. This is going to be great. It's going to be great. Quelle, I guess on the Oh Shit song, it's funny because so many people talk about the music on this being like soul of funk or something like that. Beat is not really any of that to me. It's like something very different.
Oh, yeah, it's more like driving like psych rock.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Just a little faster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just kind of a driving psych rock thing. I actually, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like the break may have been on like some basement psych rock type stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact break though.
Yeah, four on the floor kind of like driving thing. And I think that kind of feel shows up on like one or two other songs.
Like some like White Rabbit-ish, you know what I mean? Doom, doom type, you know, type stuff.
Yeah.
Sean, just come with us to do all the interviews.
Anytime.
So we can actually discuss things.
You know, there are a couple references, Gene, you make on the album that fucking I definitely had to look up. And the Arabian...
I enjoy when people have to Google things.
The Arabian Nights one was definitely one. There was the Scheherazade.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Got it.
Scheherazade was the central character in the classic story 1001 Nights, which contains the tellings of both Aladdin and Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves. As the story goes, the Persian king would marry a new virgin each day and behead her the next. When Scheherazade was selected, each night she managed to postpone her execution by beginning a story but not ending it. The king spared her each day so as to hear the end of the story. After 1001 nights of stories, the king had fallen in love with Scheherazade and spared her.
Why flip that? What were you trying to get at?
Sometimes it starts, sometimes I, you know, we've discussed the whole work backwards from the future thing, and there are certain words and things I want to bring up. And then I get really excited because I'm like, oh, shit, this means like five things. This is going to be great. And then anytime that I have to go back and like even check up on my own just brain, just knowledge and be like, let me research this and make sure that everything fits. All the pieces are in there and it ends up working. So I was excited because I really Scheherazade I really wanted to use it. And I was like, where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. The last week has been one long day. So at some point yesterday, I saw Fresh Daily retweet a tweet where someone said, double ad Andre.
Double ad Andre.
Yo, it's a double ad Andre.
You know, I like a good quad Andre.
You like quad Andre?
Quad Andre.
Quad Andre? Yeah. That's actually my favorite basketball player.
I thought that was a football player.
A real good prospect. Quad Andre.
Oh,
quad man. Andre Brickishaw?
Yo, that boy can play. You see Quad Andre
quad
on the
court, Andre Shahrazad Brickishaw? He good.
Boy, that boy can play.
Oh, man. Quelly, you've kind of the G-Funk thing on House Call. Mm. The kind of like funky worm style.
Yeah.
Funky Worm is the Ohio Players' often sampled 1973 track that became the basis of countless West Coast rap songs.
Oh, that's funky. That's funky. Like nine cans of shaving powder. That's funky.
What was the point, like, signifying G-Funk on that song?
You mean vocally or just musically, production-wise?
Production-wise.
It was a fluke, and I made that beat a long time ago, and I've been trying to, like, shovel it off on the people for, like, a few years. I think I wanted it to be on B&U. It was great, too, and I tried to get... like the second time we've brought up these two bastards in the last like couple of days, but I wanted to get Fat Father and Marv One on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, nah, fuck you, Quella.
I hope that's your next album. It's just everyone who said that.
No, but you know what it is it's industrial, like a minimal industrial song of where the bass sample comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I initially was kind of going more in the way of like just making like some every blue moon I just make some crazy shit just for me to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And while chopping it up, you know, I was kind of done with it, and I did like one last thing to it, like I'm just gonna move on to another sample, and it, you know, kind of don't 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 do, and then I kind of hit that doom. Dun, 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 dun. And something about it just sounded like, you know, before the drums, you can't really notice that it's that funky. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it just really sounds like some crazy, crazy driving, you know, like noise music type stuff. And as soon as I dropped a little couple drums on there, it just immediately sounded G-funky as hell. I think I played it for Gene around that time, right? Mm-hmm. And you were like, yeah, I like this, but it's all right. And I don't know if you ever came back to it either. And then when we chose
I knew that I didn't want to...
Oh, you wanted to sing on it. I think Gene initially wanted to sing.
Which is why
sing
the
on
hook
it
happened.
Right.
So...
Yeah, and
when
so...
When I was writing the hook, and then we got everybody to go in.
Mm-hmm.
On that hook.
The buzz come a bunch of like a brain.
That was like, I know when a beat's not for me.
Right.
And I'm like, no, this isn't me. But if I'm not, like, I'll do some,
I'll
you know,
sang on it,
yeah,
though. Yeah. Yeah.
And also play. I wanted to play on it.
Right. So then, you know, yeah. So then Gene just kind of, more kind of added the Bootsy Clinton, you know, flair to it and kind of really spiced it up, because the initial one is just really, really dirty. The one that's not on the album.
Mm-hmm.
And we really polished it up, made it a little funkier for the album. But the initial one was just some dirt ball shit. I wanted to talk about dirtball shit over.
I'm like, this needs more guitars and keys at the end for some reason. Yeah.
No,
I'm extra,
glad you did. Yeah.
I am extra.
I'm glad you did, though.
Would you guys
really...
do that? Kind of finish each other's ideas production-wise?
I mean, her more than me, because mm-hmm. I'm always like, it's fine.
He's like, this is done, and I'm like, it doesn't have 700 tracks. How could it be done, Chloe?
I'm like, it's got a bass line and a drum. That's all I do.
Right.
Very cavemanish that way.
On Gold, Purple, Orange, Chloe, you start. Your verse on it is just a series of statements, right? Definitive statements.
Yeah.
Everything is this way. Yeah. You know, every A is B.
Right.
Everybody all right, gotta be white. Everybody disagree, gotta be wrong.
Everybody black dick, gotta be long.
Every mixtape drop, gotta be free. Everybody from the hood, gotta be G.
How did you envision people reacting to those statements as your verse went on?
I've
never thought about it. I was really writing that one for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I initially wrote it over, I think it's the thing that Nick Offerman is speaking over,
mm-hmm.
on whatever that song is titled, the one with Nick Offerman.
Relax, everything is just fine. You don't have to do anything about issues that don't affect you.
The instrumental behind that's yeah. what I initially wrote it over. Yeah, I don't think I really thought about people's reactions to it as much as I just thought, like, this is kind of just what I want to say right now. You know what I mean? And kind of just building up to that turn where I go, but, you know, all that shit aside, I don't really care what y'all label everything, because I'm, at the end of the day, I'm just me. You know what I mean?
Two ain't the same. Why one gotta be broke? You can play the game. I ain't gotta be nothing for you but me. From the head nappy, 2 feet.
Can't hurry. So I was just kind of naming shit, you know? Things that I see, especially nowadays with Twitter and things like that. You just see everybody's truths. You know what I mean? Just everything is so, this is exactly what it is, and this is this, and this is that. And, you know, like, I don't really care. You know what I mean? Just mm-hmm. just a bunch of people spouting off crap. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how I felt about writing the verse. I was just spouting off all the crap that people spout out, and then just being like, shut the hell up at the end of it.
Right. Makes sense. And Gene, what your verse is obviously very different. Why put that kind of verse that starts out about your childhood and stuff on that song in relation to what Quelle was saying?
Young girl, side ponytail, thrift store garb, frizzy hair, bookworm, but street smart. Immigrant children watching buckwheat late night. Listen to Depeche Mode, Big Audio, or Dynamite. Identity.
Well, Gold Purple was really nice for me because his verse was already done, and he had gone into that hook, and I was like, oh, I'm not changing that. Let's keep that. That's it.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out a way for it to work for me. And I was like, oh, I get how do I make this work for what I need to say? And I don't know, I guess what the beat's telling me to say, does that sound weird?
I mean, I've heard enough people say it that it doesn't sound weird to me anymore. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it felt like that. It did feel, it made me feel like a De La album.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I feel like that would be the kind of chemistry that would happen there. And we don't always have to do the same thing. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, Mobb Deep, Drink Away the Pain, Q-Tip.
Right.
And I fill my mind up with zany and drink away the pain.
Tommy Hill was my nigga, and others couldn't figure how me and Hill figure used to move through with vigor. Had to sit and plan on how to make these seven figures. Said a Brinks is coming through at Fashion Avenue.
Mobb Deep's Drink Away the Pain features Havoc and Prodigy personifying different kinds of alcohol. Q-Tip's verse, because he explained later he didn't really drink a lot back then, switched the conceit to talking about clothing brands instead.
But also still so confusing. But
it really went left.
It really, god damn it. but yeah, a way to make it work and then still come back into the hook mm-hmm. and then make that make sense.
Right.
And be like, no, I don't, you know, the idea is that I don't have to be anything except for me, but this is the reason that I'm like that. Let me just explain some of it to you. So it was, my initial thought was write it like Chunk in The Goonies, where they're like, tell us everything and start from the beginning. And he's like, okay, I'll tell you everything. The first grade.
Why don't you spill your guts? Tell us everything.
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 Everything. Okay, I'll talk. In third grade, I cheated on my history
exam. In fourth grade, I stole my Uncle Max's toupee and I glued it on my face when I played Moses in my Hebrew school play. In fifth grade, I knocked my sister 80 down the stairs.
And I think that might have been my first draft of it. It was
which is your whole childhood.
A little chunky.
Yeah.
I actually didn't really view that as a chorus either. But that happens a lot with me. People always go, yo, the chorus on that song is crazy.
He was just going. Like, there's, and I was like, no, I don't. Let's not do any more work. This is totally the hook. And also, this sounds like it needs a saxophone.
Right.
Let's just skip all of that all the fuck together.
Yeah. Just to jump ahead, actually, Quelle, speaking of arrangements, there was something, the next to last song, Waiting for the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, there's two sections.
Right.
But the B section is not the chorus.
No.
Which I thought was kind of cool and unusual. It shows up like as a in between the verses and kind of like a you're halfway through the verse type thing.
Nice ball from your right mind. Sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's knucklehead niggas, a lot of times it's the cops. Some brothers live in the dark all day. Ride between the rock and a hard place. Cause the light of day is a hard way to chase your liquor up.
Yeah, no, I love that type of stuff. You know, not boo-booing on anybody, but people often like since about Blue Monday, you know what I mean, my first like one where like a bunch of people in different cities than I lived in were listening to it, everyone's always had this thing where they go like Quelle either like doesn't seem to care about arrangements or doesn't really like arrange his songs or something like that, as if I just kind of stumble onto them like Urkel or something like that.
No, I mean that B section shows up in a consistent place.
Everything. I've never released anything where every part of it, including the latency of things or the fact that this refrain only happens once at the very end of the song, or like the chorus is 3/4 the way through the song and then there's just like two words after that or something, like it's all intentional. You know what I mean? And I think the reason it sounds weird sometimes to people is because every standard song isn't arranged that way, but things are only weird until they're not weird.
It's always interesting. And it was really interesting for this album because, if I'm going in next and he's like, I've already done a verse, and I'm like, well, I never want to go in and record my verse first and then be like, and then I'm going to do it again later. This is a one-time deal. That's it. You're lucky if you get more than one take out of me.
Right.
But it was so throughout the album, if he had, done a verse first, like it was always really interesting to hear like where it ended and then be like, what?
was low key like some tension moments where I was like, how do you not understand where I'm saying you should come in?
Things so differently.
Right.
But it was a really nice one because there's that change up. And I like, anything that's got a change or it feels like an uncomfortable break. So writing the hook for that, I was deciding like where it starts, where it ends. Do we go with that? Do we follow it? Do we leave it? And then I think the first version of that, I sang the hook for and I was like, no, Anna, Anna would sound amazing on this. So let's just have that.
And Anna killed it.
Don't waste your dreams, never gonna be perfect.
And then she killed it again, better than she killed it the other time. So yeah, we went through like 3 or 4 different variations.
It's interesting sessions and because Quelle has a thing sometimes where he samples and it's in between notes.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you go like there's things that I was like, okay, I'm gonna go to play keys on this, and I'm like, no. No, it's not on the fucking keyboard. So even like singing and re-singing harmonies, we were going over them so many times because it's really intricate and beautiful and sort of like notes hidden within notes.
we can't talk about this record
without
talking about police violence and police violence against Black people specifically. That hangs over this record. The Gold Song, you have this line, Gene, where you it seems like one of the things that you talk about with it is not just the not just what happens, but reaction to it. You know, your own personal reactions and the reactions of people around you. You have that line, you can be the things they say to be and get killed.
Without life built for the right price, kill, because you can be the things they say to be and get killed. With difficulty comes love.
And that is about, to me, among other things, that the fact that these horrific things happen and then you have to witness an endless parade of people saying, but only if he had, she should have known too.
Yeah. If you just comply, you guys,
right.
And why don't you just, if you just, that particular line was, it's very interesting that I've only seen like a couple of people bring that up. And, I wanted to put it on Gold Purple. And I wanted to have it be something that feels so like lighthearted. And I'm like, I'm talking about this is, but also all of this could mean nothing. Mm-hmm. All of me trying to be me and be like, be free, be yourselves, mm-hmm. be, if you're going to be, if they call you weird and you're Black, it's fine. Just, you know, feel free to be amazing, just like everyone else, but you're not fucking just like everyone else. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
It weighs on you every day,
sure,
all the time, and it's heavy. And some days it's heavier than others,
right.
But there's never a time when you forget about it. You're not allowed to forget about it,
right? And we're in this time now where, over the past maybe 3 years, the issue has sort of reached mainstream consciousness post Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like it is any more prevalent in the world than it was before 2014.
No, it's just in front of everyone's faces right now. And still somehow the idea that there needs to be more proof.
Right.
So fascinating.
Yeah.
Like.
Right. What is your burden of proof at this point? Right? Like, how much do you need?
What else? I don't know what else needs to be provided. When I was coming back from Cincinnati, I don't know how I didn't know this story about this kid who decided who was like, I'm going to go be Black for like a month. And then he got like a week in and he was like, no, I want out. Like, he was just emotionally, physically destroyed inside. He was like, fuck this shit.
Wow.
One afternoon I was walking back to my hotel down this road. Police officer pulled me over at that intersection, started to hassle me about who I was and why I was there. Things like this never happened to me when I was white.
And in the short time I spent as a Black, I can only conclude that perhaps we haven't come as far as we thought.
Josh Solomon talked about his experiment on the Oprah Winfrey Show in February 1995. He took some pills to change his skin color, but was so horrified at what he experienced that the experiment only lasted 1 week.
And I'm like, I feel like if there were some sort of program where we could make that shit happen, check it out, you guys.
Yeah.
Off subject and
of course.
Old subject. I swear to God, we wrote out all of these lyrics and sent them. So I'm going to have to, I apologize to anyone that's been searching like Rap Genius and things like that for these lyrics. But I'm sitting here trying to find this Messiah line you were talking about earlier.
He's still on the Messiah.
He's still on it?
I'm still on it.
I may have misheard it.
No. I'm reading through these lyrics and they are wrong.
Is it everything wrong?
I don't, not everything, just enough that it's like that it completely changes the whole meaning behind. So anyway, that could have just been some random line. I still haven't figured it out.
Is it Jebediah? I know how much you love that story.
Yeah. My favorite.
Gene, I know you have expressed wanting to talk more about the music of this album. It's not a spoken word album after all. It's not a book of poetry. Although however much rap fans including, and I'm often guilty of this, treat rap albums as if they are you know, books of poetry or something. Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on harmonically.
Yeah.
And and obviously you are the product of jazz musicians. How do you think about harmony? What do you look for in chord progressions?
Depends on the mood, but my general feeling is heartstrings. And when you think it's going to stay someplace and you're like, oh, I'm totally into this, and it does something else and you're like, oh, fuck. Like if I can nail that kind of feeling, I took a long time crafting specifically Peacock because I wanted a lot of undertones and a lot of rhythms. Like there's just one pattern of just finger tapping that goes throughout the whole thing. But it was a lot of playing with stretching time and sounds and finding new chords that didn't exist before. And then, you know, seeing how long I could make them exist for and kind of uncomfortable times. And not necessarily sticking to 4/4, but kind of pulling it out of there.
Right.
So that kind of comfort with discomfort.
Yeah. And then you have really loud shakers in the mix also.
Really loud shakers.
Really loud.
Yes.
What was the point of having that as sort of this very beautiful, like you said, sort of complicated chord progression and then the super loud percussion?
I wanted to keep it super fucking African and those, like, you know, constant rhythms and constant drums and even that kind of feeling of urgency. So you never get to fully relax into it. Like it's something that always just keeps driving. Oh my God. Thank you so much.
Oh, so the Messiah then. So I know what you're talking about. And I was trying to think of when I say Messiah in the verse, but you're talking about
it's like
right
an interlude
before the verse.
Or something.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's that's not me. And I'm forgetting the brother's name, but it's a friend of Bay Bro.
Okay.
Who mixed a decent amount of the record and recorded pretty much most of it and played keys on portions of it. But yeah, it's one of his homies, and we were just in the lab, and I was like, you know, go in there and say some like 5% and, you know, knowledge yourself type, where you're like, ah, geez, man, leave me alone type stuff. So that's what that was.
Okay, so I didn't make it up.
No, you didn't. And also, I'm telling you, these lyrics on Rap Genius are hilarious. Like they just got so much.
We should
shit
do
wrong.
A reading.
Yeah, we should. We should. They got that. So much shit Ugh. Wrong. And
no,
I realized
no comment.
I realize I have a very slurry.
Oh, I know you don't have no comment.
Slurry talk, yeah. beef. I know sometimes I happen to have a real drawl to my delivery, but boy, is this hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it.
But speaking of
end of the Messiah,
weird black messiahs, you mentioned Malachi York. On the record.
Yeah.
Fly from New York, the black alien space race, Malachi York. The smash grab, no hashtag ride for sport. The way they burn down Greenwood and Rosewood, Florida. They reserve the hood for you to preserve the jail.
New York is the founder of the Nuwabian movement, which mixes black nationalism, ancient Egypt, UFOs, and conspiracy theories. It is generally thought that his ideas have heavily influenced the music and imagery of Outkast's 1994 album, ATLEN. As Qualley alludes to later in the interview, York was sentenced in 2004 to 135 years in prison for child molestation. He was found guilty of molesting dozens of children, some as young as 4 years old.
It's in this context of, like, you have Malachi York and then Rosewood Massacre and all this kind of stuff. I guess just talk about writing your verse on Peacock. Like,
on
what
Peacock.
Were you thinking about?
Oh, I was just trying to keep up with Gene. That's all. I'm not even going to try to make it sound deep like
he
that.
Said
Gene,
he said all the black things.
Yeah, Gene just...
He's like, let me just name black shit.
Right.
Gene was like, and then the version that's on the album isn't even the version that she initially gave me. So,
no.
So Gene was like, yeah, I'm just here, like, you know, here, do something with this. And I was like, okay, well...
I'm tired,
but let's see. I'll try to keep up. And then after I get done with mines, then she's like, here, and I'm just going to go back and make mines even better. And it was like right before there was no time for me to do anything.
No, we recorded it in the studio. And then I was like, this isn't right. I hate it. And it's supposed to be so much fuller. Like, I know I heard the like sounds of the ad libs and like shit that needed to happen in the song before I wrote my verse when I did the beat. And I was like, if I don't do that, I'll always hate this song forever.
Yeah. So. Well, my verse was supposed to be fuller too, just so y'all know.
Your verse is full of blackness.
Yeah. Just, I mean, you know, I don't think I've heard Malachi York named on a record since like 2004. So
it's been a long time.
Gene, hacking is a big image on that song.
Yeah.
I'm a proponent of the mainframe hacking. If it wasn't built for me, I'm laying the axe and break it apart and reconfigure the whole system. Take it to base level, demolition the building.
Yeah. What does hacking mean to you?
I always, my reference is always that I'm in a very Matrix Neo sort of way. But if all of us were doing that, like, I don't think the idea is to have a savior, you know. I think the idea is for, like, stop looking for that person to go in and be like, you can do it, you can hack into the mainframe. And I'm like, yeah, but what if y'all just all fucking learned how to do that? Like, that would be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that, you know, feeling marginalized or disenfranchised or being like, yeah, but we don't have to do this if we're all considered outside of the machine and outside of the system and you know, it wasn't created with us in mind, then we're at the full advantage for motherfuckers to get in there and fuck shit up.
Right. But also be careful, because you don't want to be like a Malachi York or Rosewood, because once we start getting wise, they come and gun us down real quick. So. And I'm not saying York was the greatest person, but just in general, when we do hack the system, they're usually there waiting at the end of it. Like, okay, so you're trying to get up out of here? You know what I mean? You guys are trying to build your own thing outside of this?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying that won't happen. See, I'm just like, let's go.
Let's do it, but we are going to die.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Smoking Man is great. Obviously, the name evokes the X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
But... the bridge evokes They there. Live.
The smoking man is always there. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Put on shades, amazing grace, be Camel Bay. Put on shades, amazing grace, be Camel Bay.
Which is one of my favorite movies. Well, when was the last time you saw They Live? Let's
not
start there.
That long ago, because maybe the whole movie a while ago, but I have definitely in the past 5 years watched the glasses on mm-hmm. scene at least 20 times.
You're talking about with Rowdy and
I'm giving you a choice. Either put on these glasses or start eating that trash can.
Not this year.
Okay. All right.
And then watched the South Park version.
Can't remember the South Park version.
It's Jimmy and Timmy.
I told you, put on the hat. You dirty motherfucker.
Oh my God.
Is he trying to get him to put the glasses
yes.
on?
Yes. They have, but it's the fight. It's fight. Blow by blow.
Oh,
it
really?
Is. Oh my
That's
God.
That's a long fight, too.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very long fight.
I like anything that is like it. And you're like, why are they not done yet?
Right.
Are they going to keep doing this? But I've one of my favorite movies. But I also a song I was like, nope, that one's not for me. Mm. But you guys, they killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love a good conspiracy. I love some good old conspiracy there. I tend to just call them cool truths.
Were you a big Y2K guy?
Welcome
you mentioned
to cool
Y2K
truth.
In the song, were you?
Mm-hmm.
LOLs for the ELE. 17 plus years post-bust the bus predictions. Everybody wanna...
Were you expecting
I
lights to go
we
out?
I thought we were all going to die.
Yeah.
Yep. How gullible am I? But I still think it's plausible. It's plausible. I mean, our whole infrastructure is based off the internet now, so.
Were you a big B2K?
never.
Although
You Got Served is one of the greatest movies ever in hindsight. The thing I watched it at a hotel at some point not too long ago, and I was like, wow, this is amazingly terrible.
Let's not gloss over that, Sean. Bump, bump, bump.
He did know it's B2K. Right, yeah. Yeah. Respects. Respect.
I don't know. I don't know if it's respect. I don't, it's reverse respect.
I think I lost something there.
Yo, my man knows his B2K. Respect.
Breakfast of Champions, another, you know, super, one of the more serious numbers on the record. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, Quelle, you say it on the hook, but I don't know whose idea it was originally to flip the
this
biz
guy.
Line.
Mm-hmm.
The biz turned tribe yeah. line, I guess.
Not biz. Biz.
I'm guaranteed to rock, to make the ladies scream and shout. I'm about to wreck your body as they turn the party out. Body
it's bound to wreck your body, straight burn your body out. It's bound to wreck your body, straight burn your body out. It's bound to
yeah. Biz is obviously known as the jovial party guy.
Yeah.
You know, was that...
I mean, it's a line about partying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where did the idea come to kind of flip that?
I don't know. I was, I can't remember where I was walking. I was walking somewhere towards Broadway, Bushwick. And it just, I was writing in my head, listening through the beat. I had written pretty much up to like the middle of the verse. It just popped into my head. It wasn't as contrived as it just felt right. And I mean, you know, like people like us, and I, you know, and I include all of us in this, I'm pretty sure I feel like I'm in a safe place to assume that we all have a general level of rap Tourette's, where like pretty much any thought you can put into rap words,
right.
You know what I mean? Like you can adapt some line from some song that's just, in your
anytime someone's
any
like 6 minutes, you're like, God damn it.
Right. Dougie Fresh, you're on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think, you know, I think maybe the thought about like it wrecking your body and burning you out popped into my head. And then I was like, huh. Kind of sounds like it's bound to, you know, I'm bound to, you know, whatever, and straight turn the party out and, you know, blah, blah. And, it, you know, so it's just rap Tourette's.
Mm.
I think I can pretty much find a line from a rap song to fit pretty much any thought. And even if it's just a little twist, but also just an homage to, you know what I mean? Throw a little hip hop in there for the ute.
Right.
But
they don't know.
You?
Yeah, and Gene, you flip that tribe line on that song too.
Yeah.
Do it for the strong, we do it for the meek. Booming in your booming in your booming in your Jeep.
Is it nobody's past agendas? It's just hard to sing some lullabies to sleep when they're pumping and you're pumping in your Jeep.
And I was, again, as terrible as I am working in a team on anything. There were things that were so wonderful about this. I'm like, I don't have to handle the weight of all of this. And right. I'm like, and also when you hear someone do it and you're like, there's nothing that I could think of that would have been better to do over this beat.
Right.
Like there's, you nailed it. You nailed it and you made it easy for me. So immediately I was like, oh, well then there's definitely, sadly and very easily, you know, a rap Tourette's starts with lines that can correlate
right
to exactly what we're talking about, and you're like, oh shit, this is fucked up. This shouldn't be that easy.
Also, you know, I just thought about this. This is mad deep.
Oh jeez.
So nah, really. So like, you know, controlling people of color in the United States is big business. And the song is about how the country, which is essentially a huge business, is always basically beating us down whenever we try to, you know, live and be free.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, nobody beats the biz.
Shut up.
So Jesus, that's what the
Christ.
That's the song. That's wild deep. Think about it. If you don't know your hip hop, you might have to go and then deconstruct that and then come back. But yeah.
But and Quelle, one of the things that song is about, or seriously, the idea that this shit happens so frequently that even if you are paying attention, and feel the incidents deeply, they can blur together in your head.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's too much. It's too much. It's overload. I mean, I already just do bad with the internet and like text and email and I don't know, all the other crap. It's just too much. Too many people talking to you at one time. And now, you know, now with this piece of shit in the office and you know, just... It's just nonstop.
It's a whole other level of exhaustion.
Thinking about it has just kind of locked my brain up again. Like, it's too much going on.
Right.
It's too much.
Right. I mean, you don't mention that guy, 45's name on the album.
No.
But he's sort of there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, is it necessary?
He's like a nefarious smog.
You know when it's like, you know when it's daytime and you know when it's nighttime.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
that's basically it. And the other things I feel like needed a little bit deeper of an emotional relatability to let people know that you're not alone in feeling that way.
Right.
And I feel like everyone's already gotten all their feelings out on Trump, you know, all the time. I'm like, yeah, but also, what about your self-care and your own soul and just dealing with being in this body all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You guys want to take a nap?
What was your first reaction to the Kendall Jenner commercial?
If you've forgotten or missed it, we've linked to an article in the show notes about the horribly tone-deaf ad that Kendall Jenner made for Pepsi, which trivializes Black Lives Matter and police brutality.
Both of you, when the first time you saw it.
I'm not like shock or surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of, you know, you kind of want to be like, you guys are not tone-deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
But not like the giant outrage that the internet is all seemed to feel.
I just, not outraged because you're already like, I'm sorry, I feel like
have you never watched TV or movies?
People
or...
before? Have you never seen them do anything? Right. And the apology is always, you know, interesting because you're like, yeah, but if no one had said anything,
you'd
be fine.
Commercial would have just run its course. And
so, you know, social media is great sometimes for the fact that it's so many people's voices, mm-hmm. being able to be like, say, man, you realize that this is like not okay. Maybe do something about it. And then also for the same reason that it's terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did a good job.
Yeah.
I love watching commercials get pulled now. It's like one of my favorite things.
You can sort of get an inkling when you first see it. Oh, this is going to be.
Yeah. Like, oh, this is going to be great.
Down. Yeah. You mentioned Black Panther, Gene, on the track.
Mm-hmm.
The very first time we talked, you'd mentioned the Jamie Foxx routine is sort of this horrible representation of South Africa.
Yeah, that was fucking terrible still, Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
But his stand-up was, you know, he was like, I got off the plane. He was like, and it was just the smell, and it was horrible.
There's some things you got to get used to when you get to Africa, like the smells. Bring you an extra set of nostrils or something to click on, because you're going to burn those first two right the fuck off as soon as you get off the plane. Shit, what the fuck is this I landed in?
It went into such of a depiction of Africa. I was like, why would you do that? Because I just came from Cape Town. When I got off the plane, I was like, oh my God, it smells amazing.
What has it been like as someone from Africa to see, albeit a fictional representation of Africa, but one just become like the biggest movie in the country?
Well, so we had like a couple of hours before we went on our big nerd cruise, and we realized that if we didn't go see it like in that couple of hours that we really didn't have, mm-hmm. that we were not going to be able to see it until a week later. And I got really stressed out that morning and I was like, we don't have time. We don't have time. And Kwala, usually like, being very calm, he's like,
oh, we're going to see Black Panther.
He was like, okay, it's okay. And, I was, and then I came, you know, downstairs like half an hour later. I was like, it's fine. We can go. We should go. Spent 2 hours just as it was about 2 minutes in, just weeping. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there were things that I was going to see, and I didn't know that there were other things that I needed to see so badly
until it
would be small, just tiny, tiny bits of things. I didn't know how much I needed all of that. And walking out of the theater was like, we were done.
And how much I needed it to be, to how good it felt to see something, you know, because I don't want to be totally like just anti, because some relationships that existed in that movie have existed in other great movies starring Black people. But how good it was to see some of those relationships not set in the urban environment. Mm, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah. Like,
here we go with this again, you know, or the other dynamic or the other extreme that always happens, which is it's either like urban environment or it's, you know, staple like Cosby mm-hmm. Formula, you know what I mean? So it was just good to see.
There was
brothers and sisters, people and puppy love, and you know, just not in the same setting that they always put us in. You know,
there were it was relationships.
Yeah, I would say what's like one image from the movie or something that really struck you that you weren't expecting.
It's not one because I didn't know who the villain was going to be,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, oh shit, they killed him off. And then they just left us. And that was amazing. But for me, it was all the relationships. It was, you know, that it was Africa, that it was watching these women, that it was watching this amazing, powerful dude be so vulnerable and honest and kind, and that it was watching a little sister, and I understand that kind of relationship, and mm-hmm. also, you know, just wanting to be cool and also kind of being like the off one. And then the Killmonger relationship hit me really hard as being an immigrant, but as being the only ones from our family that were here,
mm-hmm.
and then going back home and they're like, well, you're not. Like, you're African, but you're not African. Like, you're not from here. You're American. So there, I felt it from every possible angle of that movie. And it was so much, it was an overload. And then when my family was here, we took them to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, so this is a lot again. But I got through that one without violently crying my eyes out. And it was still fucking amazing.
Wow. Was Zero always intended to be Quelle when you're making the music, where you're like, this is something for Gene to black out on, I'm not getting near this?
Still carded, immortal form in the shape of adorable, stay sharper than Dominican barber, shape fucks, marble, tabletop elegance, Parker, Posey, Peter, New York elements, all irrelevant, Smithsonian.
It's like, how did that?
No, I don't remember how that one started.
It was on a bunch of beats that you gave me.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to start writing the album like a lot, like maybe a month before that. But I would walk around like wherever I was going with just that beat on repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that it's that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah, I believe maybe not verbatim, in some way, shape or form, Jean told me that she was going to spaz on that one.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing for me to do after that. I just shit and let it happen.
Yeah. But you made the video for it, which is incredible.
Thank
you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Video game homage
mm-hmm.
that I was telling Gene before you came downstairs. I remember you talking about that. God, it was 9 months ago, a year ago, when you were like, I think I want to make an 8-bit mm-hmm. video. Maybe I'll learn to program.
Right.
And then just to see it actually happen.
Slowly, slowly yeah. come to come to reality. Yeah.
What was it like to have Wired hit you up and say, we want to talk to you about like this technical thing you did?
We'll have a link to the Wired article in the show notes.
I think the reach out was great. Them reaching out was great. I think, you know, sometimes with these interviews, you know, some, not ones like with fine gentlemen such as yourself. But, you know, sometimes they you know, they cram so much publicity into such a short period of time. So really, and I really wanted to discuss gaming more. And, you know, I thought I'd you know, bring a lot more opportunities to have conversations about that. And it really hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Which is why, yeah, we're not.
I occasionally posted just like, somebody talk to me about
we're not going to move on to the next video because we just haven't had time to concentrate because it's like it was album hit. And now everyone's getting used to it. And I was like, I feel like we should stay on Zero for a long time because we have not discussed it. And I feel like that just shouldn't get past. God, that's a lot of work.
We were having a conversation at some point. I can't remember what game we were playing. Maybe it was Tekken, the new Tekken. I can't remember what the chick's name is. I got the black chick on there. And,
Raven.
You sure? That's not the dude with the sunglasses?
No, I feel like she's another Raven. God damn it.
Sure enough, Master Raven is a black woman character first introduced in Tekken 7, and Raven is a black male character first seen in Tekken 5.
Josh, thanks.
But we were talking about Raven. And I had to go back and really look through it. There's like co-characters. You know, like technically a main character, but not the main character. There's, of course, like characters as far as like fighting games are not non-playable characters and NPCs and things like that. But that, is it Raven?
Yes, because it made me feel a way.
Hey, look, you know what I mean? I know I'm the smartest man and alive, also, but sometimes I'm wrong.
And also, they're like, it's a black character. Right. Name it Raven.
Yeah, right.
Or Crow.
Right.
Wild, right? Tar. Yeah.
Tar.
But we
charcoal.
Were,
yeah.
Fight. So we were playing Tekken, and we started. I had to get on the computer to really look, and I was like, I can't think of one game off the top of my head where the main character is a black woman.
Mm.
The main character, not like, you know, not like maybe like Resident Evil, is it 4 or 5, where you can play a black woman, you can choose between the two. Just it's just her.
Right.
I didn't know that until I started playing through as her. Mm-hmm. And it was like 10 minutes into it. I was like, why am I really emotional?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've never fucking done this before.
Right.
Mm.
What? Why wouldn't? It's a fucking video game.
Yeah.
Right.
In a fantasy world, you could create anything.
Mm-hmm.
Why have I never had this experience before?
Right.
And it was. It felt amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you can always be like, yo, I'm going to pick the black person just because I want to pick the best. You're never, you know, you're never forced to play as other people like you are with other games, you know.
And they usually have headphones on.
Yeah. Yeah, they have headphones
cool
or bell bottoms or like a backwards cap.
And an afro.
I think I downloaded,
Tennis game or something.
Yeah, one of the hot shots type tennis games or something onto the computer,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, I remember or on mm-hmm. the PlayStation, I remember talking to Gene like jokingly, like, I'm gonna win a black character soon. Do you think it's gonna be the disco guy, the hip kid with the boombox, the, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
which
black character are we gonna get? And it ended up being the hip kid, the hip little kid with the backwards cap. He was adorable, but still, you know, it was just like, it's always
His cap was backwards.
His cap was
playing
backwards.
Tennis.
Yeah.
Because that's right. A great way to keep the sun out of your eyes, step your hat backwards.
It's urban tennis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was instead of a racket, he had a broken 40 bottle. It was so sad.
it was really important to make the video, not just because, you know, I know Gene's passion about her assassin story and so on and so forth.
We begin our story in L.A. Our player's on a mission of revenge. In a small town, fire breaks out, shots pierce the air.
and a massive killing spree begins. Is this just a random act of senseless violence? Or is the story deeper?
A number of Gene's songs and videos, starting with 2003's Chapter One Destiny, follow the story of an elite assassin betrayed by her handlers and bent on revenge.
Also, just to have a video game, even though it's not in playable form, have the idea of a video game with a black woman as the lead.
And if we never exchanged gifts at any point in life, ever, that
be careful what you say, because I'm gonna hold you to it.
I'm fine with this. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah,
like you made me a fucking kick, and come in and randomly, and I'm just sitting watching TV, and he's like, can I just get a picture of you from the side? And I'm like, not right now. He's like, I just need to see your hand and build this in this world. And I was like, this is amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And you get to see this world that you laid out in Assassins and a couple of the other, a bunch of other songs.
And this, our fucking cat. Yeah. And that is what he does. He follows me everywhere. So.
Yeah. Can he drive?
Check out the Zero video to see what Sean is talking about here.
I wouldn't get in a car that Littles was driving. I'm sure he would try.
Mm-hmm,
he'd just put a rock. Yeah. He'd put a rock.
Yeah.
College try.
River, wanted to hold off on that one because that is the most, ends the album is also the most directly personal in terms of autobiographical, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene, musically, there's a full minute before we even hear your voice. And I think it's just you breathing. And then there's another minute before the drums start.
Mm-hmm.
Why set up things for so long?
I like time. I like taking time. In very much a way that it goes back to the idea of being outside of this machine and rules of you have to do these things and you have to make these things a single length or a certain length. Since none of that applies here, I think we both approach things this way, is, if things require time to get to it, it's okay. Give it its time. Let it breathe. You don't have to go directly into that. And I think that it deserves kind of a breath before going into that conversation.
Yeah.
I've been waiting to write this verse a long time and deciding whether or not it's okay to do it while my dad is still alive, and working and doing things.
Who still never changed from blaming mom, blaming us for addiction, claiming none, praying five times a day was saving us. Fuck him, thanking for the genes, unfortunately ain't enough, cause ain't enough.
And then sadly, my choice to do it was nobody's really listening anyway. Maybe there will be like a few people who get it, but nobody is going to really pay attention or think that you're talking about your father. So just go ahead and do it and be okay with it. And if the conversation has to happen, then I'm ready to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was emotionally and musically, and it just fit and made sense.
Was that the first time you've mentioned him on a song that you can remember?
It's the first time I've maybe not mentioned, but was very blunt about and not really delving into our relationship, because it's an open letter to my brother that I don't really get to talk to,
right.
but discussing our relationships with our dad. Yeah.
What? So I guess that answers the question of why now.
Why not now?
Why you wrote it now?
No, I'm saying why not now.
Yeah.
I think I'm just there in life. And then you can't do like zero on the same album and be like, oh, I don't give any fucks about this, but this one thing. And I moving into a new part of my life, and I've been in physically abusive relationships. And the other day, on Twitter was the first time that I've been like voluntarily be like, yeah, okay, you know, this happens. I've been in those relationships and everyone still works with those people. Mm-hmm. Like none of that changes. It's okay to say these things out loud. It's okay to take your time and say them when you're ready. Yeah, my dad's actually going to be in town. So this should be interesting. I'm sure he knows that I have a new album out.
Yeah, when her family was here, we were driving down the street and her cousin's like, hey, look, it's your dad. It's
like the
billboard. Oh, billboard.
Yeah.
Oh.
So yeah, and interesting.
Yeah.
But I reached a certain age and I'm like, I'm fine. I wouldn't have done it if my mom was still alive, because I felt like it was her story to share. Mm-hmm. And if she didn't feel like she wanted to talk about it, then no, then I'm not going to say anything. But I feel like people should be held accountable for their actions, whether they're considered, great artists or contributors or whoever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Be accountable for your shit.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. I mean, that's on a different, less immediately personal scale. I think that's something that people are starting to try to figure out now.
Yeah.
In a wider sense of like trying to grapple with this idea of like, there is an artist who does a terrible thing. What happens now?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought it would be interesting. And I was like, either no one responds or I'm also ready for people being like, how could you say this about him? What a great man.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah. And Quella, you talk about your sister on Naps.
Still you and you and I. Some small fries. My sister. And OJ's shade regrets. Because I fade out.
Or address it?
No.
To her.
I don't have a sister as far as like from the same womb. I have a sister-in-law.
Oh, okay.
But the verse is actually to me and my brothers. So, and kind of for the same way that Jean said she was holding off on writing the type of verse she did, I addressed it to all three of us because, I mean, one, I've never been a big fan of putting other people's business out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Their thing to talk about. I'd never like when someone comes up to me and goes, yo, Quelle, man, I heard this crazy story. And I'm like, yo, if you ain't hear from me, I don't even want to, you know what I mean? Like, don't be telling my stories. But it's a letter to me and my brothers, because I have two, Gene kind of had no choice but to talk about one. But I didn't want to just...
No, I have another secret brother.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, I don't
we'll
know.
Talk about
I don't
later.
Know. I yeah, probably do.
Probably do. but, I didn't want to be a thing where, one brother was like, yo, why you single me out? Like, he be acting up and you be acting up. So I was like, in all fairness, let me just address how we all be acting up.
Mm-hmm.
And how we're just all trying to pull through our, personal shit, shits that we took ourselves or shits that were put upon us, what I mean? And how, I don't want there to ever be any resentment between us, over anything that's happened in the past, because the ultimate goal is to grow and accept or decide you just don't want to, be a part of that person's life anymore. But if you want to be a part of your you know, a family member or a friend or whatever, if you want to be a part of their life, you know, I think there's a level of, you know, you have to be willing to work with them and help them through, not necessarily physically help them through their things, but you can't be like damning, you know what I mean? Because everybody, or just cut them off, but don't just keep someone around just to tell them how much you hate them every day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have your brothers heard the song? Or?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Did you talk about it
before you released it, or?
Oh no, but I mean, I don't think we had to like necessarily talk about it. We talk about it when we talk anyway. You know what I mean? We have to talk about the song. The song is so, you know, vague on certain details that we talk about way more than that song. That song is light work.
Yeah, he talks. Getting to talk to your family a lot, so I don't get to talk to my brother, and I don't know if he's going to hear this,
but
hopefully he does. Oh, and that's Anna Wise in the beginning.
Anna Wise is a solo artist and member of the band Sunny Moon. She also collaborates frequently with Kendrick Lamar and can be heard on tracks like Real, These Walls, and Pride.
And Babe Rowe on the keys.
Yeah.
And it was a real last minute thing. And we were just there and we were like, just do an intro. I think they did like two takes and it was so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was like, yep, made me cry. Let's keep it. And also Melanie Charles.
Yeah, she's a beast.
On flute.
Melanie Jean-Baptiste Charles is a Brooklyn-born Asian-American musician, flutist, actress, and teacher. She has sung and played with artists like Laura Isabor and SZA.
And I was like, man, I wish we had like something else. And, you know, somehow in this building of studios, I was like, well, Melanie's here.
It was
she's
like
got
Seinfeld.
A flute.
Like Melanie just knocked on the door and ran in. Hey, whoa, with a flute.
Knocked it out. I was like, what? And she was like, can I get some direction? I was like, Feel like you're playing in a cave. And then she played the next take, and I was like, that was it. Shit.
Gina, I wanted to ask you, as we're talking, it's just a couple of days since Winnie died.
Mm-hmm.
Winnie Mandela passed away on April 2nd, 2018, 4 days before this interview was conducted.
How are you doing? How did that strike you?
You know, it was always a very... Winnie was a very interesting woman, and there was a lot of times where she was completely shut out and turned away and being like, no, that's not what we do. And she, I equate Winnie and my mom kind of in the very same way, because it was very much like, this is not what we're expecting of you as a wife. And this is not the way you're supposed to support. What we want you to be strong, but like not that kind of strong. And she was like, "What? Fucking kill him. Let's go." my mom wrote her song for Winnie Mandela, and that was one of the songs that she would, you know, she would perform a lot, and it was on her liberation suite.
Winnie Mandela, beloved heroine.
But it was also a time where she was performing these songs and people were looking at her and being like, why are you singing these songs about Africa? You don't look like an African woman. You're clearly not an African woman. What is all this? So there was, you know, she was going so hard at this, and it was not a time where the people were supporting Winnie at all, and they were turning their backs on her, and that's not what she was supposed to be doing as her supportive wifely duties. Mm-hmm. And I loved her, and I loved my mom for being like, and I support this shit.
Yeah.
That was a very interesting lesson to learn in my childhood. So it meant a lot. She was amazing.
And something kind of lighter to finish on.
No, that's it. Let's do this.
you take a strong anti-Friends stance on this album.
Face manslaughter like Friends of Monica. Fucking Rachel, Phoebe, Ross, Chronicles, Khadija, Max, honest though.
You very, very strongly imply that it is nothing more than a ripoff of Living Single.
It is a ripoff of Living Single. That's even how the time goes.
But the sort of four trope of like, we have four women and one's the, you know, this way and one's the leader and one's the ditzy one or whatever. Sort of
no, but it was actually ripped off of Living Single.
It was interesting because when Living Single came out, shortly thereafter, Warren Littlefield, who was president of NBC, they asked him if he could have any show on television, any of the new shows, which one would it be? And he said Living Single. It was in the newspaper. And the next thing you know, here comes Friends, which was...
And Living Single, I'm so glad they brought it back to Hulu. And I went back and was rewatching it. And I'm like, this was groundbreaking. This was amazing. And also, Erica Alexander was fucking killer. Like, she was a force.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're living in a very interesting time where you can kind of go back and check facts and be like, hold on, let's discuss. And then you get to bring it up on the big screen and be like, I see all these facts here. I see no lies. So, you know, as many things as I can bring up.
They wouldn't rip that off. Also, talking about Maxine, this is why there's no reason for us to really dive into this like this, but why not?
Why not?
You know, like sometimes on sitcoms, like you watch a character develop and, you know, like you said, like I forgot, you know what I mean, about the first season of Living Single altogether, but she came on like immediately her character. It wasn't like, you know, like, man,
nothing
like, this is different than how she is like six seasons later. She was like, she knew
she was a beast from the pilot episode. And it was one of those things you went back to and I watched it and I was like, that was their spinoff show. They should have given her a show.
They should have.
But that wouldn't have worked.
And kept like Sinclair there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know what I mean? Just a little you know,
Sinclair has to move out or something.
Yeah,
and then she, yeah, no, I would bring that. I would bring that back.
You'd make
shout
Maxine.
Out to Erica Alexander.
You know, obviously, you have the record now. What else is going on? I know, Gene, you have 18,000 jobs, projects, things you're always in the middle of.
This is it, I think.
Just packing the bags is done.
I'm gonna kill myself tonight.
We got a good little pack going.
We have a suicide pack.
I'm proud to have the last Quelle, Chris, and Jean Grey interview.
Did you say Logic would hate this?
I said Logic can't stop us. keep it to yourself. We're going down tonight, Logic. You can't stop us.
I think he's okay with
that. You can't change our mind. You and the other guy, whatever his name is.
And the girl who doesn't like parties.
And the girl that doesn't like parties.
That's still one of the funniest things I've read on the internet all year. I think he was doing his performance. And a very powerful song, not taken away from the song and the many people that I'm absolutely sure that it has saved lives.
Yeah, I am so sorry.
However,
I don't mean to joke about suicide. It's not funny.
Somebody said, oh, while watching the live performance, I didn't know that the girl who didn't like parties was on this song. And I was like, I immediately knew, you know, her
she
first
had that
single.
Why am I here song?
Really, I would rather be at home all by myself, not in this room with people who don't even care about my well-being. I don't dance, don't ask. I don't need.
And I was like, is that?
It's the girl that doesn't like parties.
Is that what you got from that song?
It's Logic, the girl that doesn't like parties.
And that dude who drops his location all the time.
And that dude that always letting you know where he's at.
Send me your location. Let's focus on communicating. Cause I just need the time and place to come through. Send me your location. Let's ride the vibrations.
Yeah, so that's what I have going on for the rest
Great.
Of the year.
Just making fun of Logic.
No, damn it.
You know, a song is down. That's going to be like the tag. That's going to be the tag. Everything's
Gene
fine.
Gray, this is
everything's
logic.
Fine, but logic. But logic. According to Gene Gray and Quelle Chris, everything's fine except logic. Yo, chill, chill, Sean.
4,000 words right now about how you guys hate logic and are pro suicide.
And nothing else.
Yeah, be great.
Clickbait much, huh?
The pro suicide couple.
Right.
What?
Known suicide enthusiasts, Gene Gray and Quelle Chris.
I hope you edit it down to just this portion.
That's it. We're just running just this. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are you up to?
Gene and John at the Bell House. April 25th, have not gotten there yet.
Gene and John is a variety show hosted by Gene and writer, comedian, and actor John Hodgman.
Really good guests. I definitely can't say. But as we near sort of our summer break, so we have three more shows, April, May, June. Mm-hmm. We're really pushing the guest boundaries and coming up with the funky combos. So this is the first of some funky-ass combos. But we're very excited. And I like that I can't think of anything. Oh, I'm doing a lot of writing because have been... I don't know if I can talk about this.
Really cool stuff.
Next year, I'll be doing a show at the Public Theater. I think that's all I should probably say.
Mm-hmm.
Like one show, but, you know, a show. Kind of Broadway hands. That's not how you do that. Can't talk about that.
It's a lot of stuff you can't talk about.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there thinking I got like two albums that I can't talk about yet.
Marvel Eat This Universe. You should go check that episode out. It's Justin Warner's new show on Marvel's Gone Digital. They've got a great bunch of new things that you should be looking at. You should probably start checking them to see if maybe I have something or not. I don't know yet. Who knows?
Fine.
Can't
not
say.
Not like you have any relation to comic books or anything. You're not.
No, never heard of them.
Yeah.
What are those?
I have to say, by the way, every single time, I will say this publicly because the people who fall for this don't listen anyway.
So bad.
Once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Jean will get on Twitter and pretend that she doesn't know who the comic book character Jean Grey is.
Yeah.
And people fall for it every single time. Every time.
It's entertaining as well as it is soul-wrenching.
Yeah.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
Today,
the level of mansplaining jumps up to 1,000.
Today, someone asked me, Pitchfork just dropped a new article that I didn't know they were going to do. And then... ran a kind of a short discography, and they have kind of a Cliff Notes version.
We'll have a link to the article, The Story of Gene Gray, one of rap's greatest lyricists, in 8 songs, in the show notes.
And then I said, someone asked me when the next time, no, I asked Quelle, when do you think the next time someone's going to say, I wish you would drop music was? And I was like, I think 2 weeks. And he was like, you got a couple hours. And at least 3 to 4 people responded. They're like, it's okay. The fans will be here patiently waiting. And I just kept retweeting them like, yeah, I'm sorry. It's taken so long for me to drop new
drop
music.
New music.
Sorry, guys. It's sorry. So,
it's
yeah.
Hopeless. It's
yeah.
Hopeless.
But there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Quelle,
what are you up to?
Quelle is doing 9,000 things and never sleeping.
Yeah. I just finished animation for a good brother of ours named Clint Michigan. Yeah, Clint. I got... 3 albums I'm in the process of working on. One is a solo. I can talk about that because, you know, it's just me.
It's just you.
What am I going to do? Get myself in trouble? But
is that what it's called?
It might be called that. It might be called that. It might be called Everything's Fine Except for Logic. but no, and I've I got two really good collaboration albums coming out. Mm-hmm. I believe both of them this year, but I can't announce them just yet. Mm-hmm. I recently just helped a brother of mine, Cavalier, who you've probably heard him on all of my last some odd albums. He just released his new album that I helped put together and I'm featured on. And actually, one of my favorite songs that I ever made is on there. It's called Bar Therapy.
Some brains are hard to explain. Most hearts are tangled, I think. Just try to catch my good side from every angle. We let shit slide on black hand sides much far too often. That's why fam that once lay beside, now lays in coffins. We wait to speak about
who's... And the album is Cavalier Private Stock. So I would suggest everybody go check that out.
It's very good.
As you know, as you're listening to Everything's Fine and you're like, yo, I love this album a lot, but I can only listen to it 24 hours a day. What do I do with, you know, with the seconds in between there? definitely Private Stock is a good one to squeeze in. It's a really, really, really great album, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. And it's me and George Ann Muldrow and Black Spade and Iman Omari and probably a lot of other people that my fried brain is can't process right now. But it's a really great album.
Nice. And also we're, man, to anyone, please include this part. I don't know if you've ever planned a wedding.
Oh, yeah.
If so, may the universe bless you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I understand your pain.
Right.
I mostly want to, damn it, here goes the suicide again.
Mm-hmm. And yo, miss me with all the, like, Jean had mentioned that she's heard a bunch of people say this, and I've heard it at least about like four times over the last couple months is, oh, well, you know, we just got married at in our parents' backyard.
Shut
we ain't
fuck
got
up.
Parents
Shut
with backyards.
Up. No one
Don't
has
tell me
parents
what you
got
did.
A lake house.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can fuck make you. It a lot easier if you go to your parents' lake house. Like, nigga, my parents ain't got a lake house. You know what I mean? Parents ain't got a lake house. Jean don't even like her dad.
He's not invited.
He's like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. So don't, if you're trying to, I just want you to know, if you hear this show and you have inclination to give me advice,
don't
make it
that.
Don't
we have a venue.
Don't make it back here.
But you can submit catering ideas.
Yeah, I'll take
Please
everything
help.
Else. I'll take
Please
anything
help.
Else. Yeah.
Please help. Please help.
Please.
Just end it. Please help. Just end Please. It like this. Please help.
Mm-hmm.
Please help us.
Please help.
Please help.
Help.
Catering.
Help. Help. I don't want to eat Rally's burgers.
I'm not going to eat Rally's.
At our wedding.
I will not have it.
That seems like a reasonable place to end because why not?
Yeah.
Thank you, too.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Good job, you guys. We're never going to get to talk about any of these things ever again in an interview about this album. So thank you for doing a great job and researching and listening and caring about music and people. That's awesome. Now get out.
Yeah. Get the fuck out of my house. It's been a long time since we've had Gene back on the show. But this was the perfect time for it. Everything's Fine is an amazing album, one that it's worth taking time to live with. I hope this interview gives you a few suggestions on ways into it. It's notable just how grateful Gene and Quelle were, even in the midst of an incredibly hectic, exhausting release week, to talk about their album, and particularly about the music on it. Plenty of people in hip-hop media, myself certainly all too frequently included, act as if rap is the same thing as spoken word poetry, that the music isn't worth talking about. I hope that this conversation, if nothing else, reminds you and me that that's not the case. Join us in 2 weeks when we have the return of Fonte Coleman. Fonte also has a new album out called No News Is Good News. We'll talk about that, as well as his experiences in the acting world, including a very special role as a rapping piece of fruit. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cypher as soon as it comes out, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use. Make sure you check out our archives when you're there. If you like this episode, you should listen to episode 20, where Gene makes her second visit, and we also talk to Farrah Monch. By the way, if you use Apple Podcasts to listen, go now and give us a rating and a review. It's by far the easiest way to help us out, which is why every podcast you listen to wants you to do it. Seriously, go now and do it. And you can really help us by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you each episode takes at least 20 hours of work, and we could really use the support. If even 20% of you gave us just $1 a month, I could afford to get that deluxe edition of Logic's latest album. And again, go buy a shirt, a mug, or whatever you want at merch.thecyphershow.com. You can find us at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Follow us and let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see on the show in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
I think that's an adult thing.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Josh, thanks.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts. Our web guru is Aaron Young.
Yo, that boy can play.
Audio editing by Rob Van Vranken.
Yo, my man's knows his B2K. Respect.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Jay Tan.
This is why I like you, man.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Are the reason why without knowing this, are the reason why I get paid to do this. Not for the cipher, but...
Yeah, we don't make any money.
Oh, no!
Sean and I have known each other since, like, middle school. Our other friend that we've known that long calls me 12 hours after the very first episode of this show came out that was with you.
Mm-hmm.
And says, dude, Sean knows what he's doing. Listen to this. And I went, listen to it. And it was freaking great. Then I wind up taking over for his engineer 20 episodes in. I now have like 5 podcasts that I produce because I just knew how to record and did all that stuff to the point that the new one that I have, I took over one that like the guest that's been on the most in their 130 episodes is AJ Jacobs. Because I actually emailed him today, even though I haven't met him, I was like, give me some dirt that we can ask. Like, give me the person that was cut out of the thing or something. He didn't get back to me in time, but he's like a friend of this other show that I now produce and get paid to produce.
Yeah.
Because Sean gave you an interview that you really enjoyed.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much great.
Like
the whole thing of us doing 250 episodes of this and that is like I have 5 shows now that I do because his engineer disappeared at Sandy. Like, not disappeared, didn't wash out.
Yeah.
This sounds interesting.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, you know I know how to do this, right?
Yeah.
And that was it.
This is like,
I need to bring you presents, because you are the reason
my
the show
gosh.
Is so. You got a big-ass sticker.
Thank you so much.
Because people should have them
all. I'm tired, and when I get tired, I get, like, overly emotional, so I'm not going to cry.
Aww.
But thank you.
And thank you.
See, church never ends.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just you know, this all the
changes.
Time. And that is AJ Jacobs.
Right.
Gave me that because
right.
we
That's
did the.
At. Yeah.
I get it.
Oh. It's all.
I get it, you guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Aw. Let's just cry.
Oh.
How?
That sounds
for
good.
For an hour?
Yeah. That's how we can do it. We can do it.
I actually would feel fine with that. So many things to sob about.